It's 2023, and across the world, young women are taking leadership of global movements against climate change, racism, capitalism, and patriarchal oppression. I'm Chavi Sachdev, and this is episode 2 of Rise Up Leadership Podcast from the World YWCA. In this podcast, I'm talking to feminist leaders from many different nations about the concepts and philosophies that help them choose the paths of community building that they are on. We want to use the stories these leaders share with us to provide you resources for advocacy and training, because we believe that growing feminist leadership is one of the most powerful ways to effect change for this planet. Today's episode is focused on intergenerational leadership, a need in every organization that wants young people to participate in its processes, operations, and governance mechanisms to ensure youth are leading all the way.
In the beginning, I always saw intergenerational leadership as a passing down from one generation to another.
That's Vandita Murarka.
Whereas now I see it more and more as different generations, different ages and decades sort of coexisting together and finding ways to celebrate those differences and the uniqueness each of us brings in, rather than only think of it as a stage-by-stage process, not just for people's lives, but for organizations' lives as well.
Vandita is the founder CEO of One Future Collective, a feminist and queer youth NGO. They are working with World YWCA towards co-creation of the intergenerational leadership model along with youth and intergenerational leaders. When they started out, they had two goals for their vision of leadership.
One was a more external-facing goal, which was about enabling social justice leadership in India towards, you know, solving some of our most pressing challenges. But the other was, how do we build the leadership needed internally to truly be able to create an organization that lives up to the values that it preaches outside? On the external front, we are able to bring in, you know, theory, knowledge, frameworks, involve people in leadership programs, bring in a mix of theory and action, etc. But I think we find that difficult internally because it's also an investment in time. It's also an investment in people.
And for that, leadership has to be cultivated. Vandita considers leadership to have three elements.
The first for us has always been, how do you set up people for success? How do you ensure that each person that joins your organization, your movement, your cause, is given the tools, the skills, and the support system to be able to succeed? To me, that is both a function and a necessary baseline for leadership to develop. Second, something that we have found incredibly useful in doing leadership work is looking at each person as an individual and understanding that there will always be limitation of theory, and it cannot be so customized as to apply to every individual. And then third for us, and I would say quite integral and quite central to the process, is thinking of leadership as based in values and looking at how these values can be translated into tangible actions for people who are doing leadership work, be it internal or external.
One of the challenges that Vandita sees with intergenerational leadership is that older people are sometimes reluctant to share power and allow younger voices to emerge.
We've also seen this tension amongst folks who are mentors to the organization, and just the dynamic in even how people work with each other. And if they take on more of a supervisory or adult role rather than creating a co-creation space with the young folks they work with. And for a lot of people who do work in the feminist ecosystem, they do this work because they care, and issues are not solved yet. It's not like we have solved all the issues that feminism aims to tackle. But in this sort of phasing out of older feminists or only relegating them to advisory roles, we also take away agency from them to continue to remain engaged and to add value. We sort of put a boundary fence around, this is all the value that you can add.
Additionally, Vandita points out that organizations dependent on external funding are often pushed to pursue ageist policies.
We are often prioritizing the age group within our organization based on funder needs and funder requirements. And this does create a very real fear of redundancy it creates a very real fear of becoming irrelevant and also of no longer having your voice heard. A lot of funding now needs a young person to be at the helm of an issue. A lot of organizations want to bring in young talent, but we have not created any pathways for second or third careers for older folks. I always wonder what a model would look like if both young and older feminists came together, or young and older folks in any organization came together and built models where there was more peer mentoring, but not just from older folks to younger folks, but even vice versa. How do we build more synergy and not see them as isolated issues? To me, they're quite cyclical. One feeds into the other and it continues to keep this issue ongoing.
Despite the challenges, Vandita feels passionate about the need for intergenerational leadership. As she has observed firsthand, the benefits of empowering young people to be leaders goes well beyond any narrow project goals.
I think 6 months before the pandemic or so, we ran a social justice leadership program in Nawalgarh in Rajasthan. And we worked with students of two grades to bring them together to reimagine what they would do in their communities if given the opportunity to take action. They went through an intensive training program with us on thematic knowledge, on skills, and they also implemented actionable projects in their micro communities. So there was a clear leadership shift because these are people who have always just been seen as recipients of change-making processes. However, something that we noticed that we had perhaps not even intentionally designed for was how this process led to a reduction in communal violence in that area, especially within these communities, right? The ones that were represented by these students. It led to more gender equality in the classroom. It led to boys standing up for the right for the girls in their classroom to gain an education. And that's the beauty of like social justice leadership work. It's not just about a project. It's never about an idea, a project. It's about the values and the skills you apply to your life going on from there.
Our second guest, like Vandita, is passionate about the need for organizations to really hold themselves accountable on their journeys to achieving intergenerational leadership. Dr. Amjad Muhammad Saleem is originally from Sri Lanka and currently works with the International Federation of the Red Cross, Red Crescent Societies in Geneva.
I think intergenerational leadership, intergenerational dialogue, intergenerational engagement, for me is really, it's like a relay race, right? I mean, it's like trying to understand how you can transfer the baton across from one person to the next. And we know that if you don't do it properly in the relay race, you can be disqualified. I don't think we fully realize and understand that concept within the intergenerational space. So I think that there's a lot more awareness that needs to be and recognition and humility that needs to be taken up as to how that baton is transferred and how the baton is received and the discipline in ensuring that that takes place.
One of the projects that Amjad has been deeply involved with is the Global Youth Mobilization Movement, or GYM, which is funded by the WHO and the UN, and which organizations like the World YWCA and the Red Cross have been supporting. Amjad thinks that they did achieve some measures of the baton passing goal with the GYM, but much still needs to be done.
So, for example, within the Federation, we have a youth commission that sits on the governing board, that is taking part in some of the key governance decisions, that has some level of authority, the same in national societies. So there is an element of that baton passing, but I think that we still are not very good at the informal spaces of that coaching and learning space. So I think that that is something that we possibly need to do more.
Amjad is refreshingly critical about the failures of big institutions, where some amount of tokenism seems endemic.
The moment we have a UN meeting in New York and we bring some young people and we put them on the panel with, I don't know, with President Obama or Biden or whatever, and then that's it, we've done our job, right? And then we're fooling ourselves there. But actually, that's not youth engagement, right? That's only allowing, enabling some elite, privileged kids from any of these countries who would have anyway got that opportunity to get that opportunity, right? But actually on the ground, people who are having ideas for solving problems in their communities, they will find a different way of doing it. If you talk to the Fridays for Future folk and you know, ask them why did they kind of go by themselves and maybe not engage with organizations like YWCA or IFRC or any of the other big six, you know, they'll be very candid and tell you, well, you guys are too bureaucratic. You guys, we won't fit in with you because, you know, you need us to conform to certain things, which we're not. It's not us. It's a grassroots movement that is growing up, that is seeing an idea, seeing a cause, and taking action.
Like Vandita, Amjad believes one of the root causes preventing intergenerational leadership is the funding model of nonprofit organizations.
So, I think one of the challenges that we have is really to try and that business model, which is a very traditional NGO way of working, that business model into what is now emerging as a space where young people's ideas themselves take much more value and allowing them to actually work on something that could fail, that they could fail, they could prototype, they could test, they could fail, and they can learn from that. Our business models don't allow us to do that, right? We're not encouraged to fail because we have donor requirements to meet. And, you know, if we can't go to a donor and say, I'm sorry, you know, we failed on this, but we'll do it better next time.
On a more fundamental level, Amjad suggests that the entire 20th century approach to leadership is flawed since it was based on a very military top-down value system.
Frankly, a lot of our organizations are also used to command and control. Again, it goes back to how we were formed up and in the era that we're formed up. And largely because if you look at sort of a lot of the early leadership books that were written, particularly in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, were all written by people who actually came from a military background, right? So it was very, very clear that, you know, within a military perspective, leadership is from the person who leads at the front is the leader, is the person, and so he or she should know what to do, right? I think that notion of leadership has to change, that the leader is not necessarily the one who knows everything, but the leader is the one who creates the space to enable those who know things to actually perform better, right? So you are creating that enabling environment to allow your constituency to flourish.
There are three things that Amjad suggests as essential to fostering intergenerational leadership: intentionality, structure, and patience.
Part of that also means that there has to be a vulnerability that is accepted by leaders, that you don't really know everything, nor should you know everything. And it's okay to admit that you don't know everything, right? So I think we need to create those safe spaces or those great spaces to be able to test ideas and fail. And that, you know, you're able to kind of reach out and go and ask for help where you don't know things. That's a mindset. That's a huge mindset that needs to happen. So I think part of that is then recognizing that there's a need to change those systems, being brave enough to change those systems. I think being bold enough to test some ideas, I think, is also part of what we need to do. And frankly, I don't think that most of us are brave enough to do that.
Courage is also a theme in our next guest's thoughts. Reverend Nikki Ashwood from Jamaica is currently working with the World Council of Churches.
We, the older generation, are often, for want of a better term, we're often stuck in the mud because we have found the tried and true ways of doing things and we know that it works, and God forbid that anyone should question the way in which we operate. No, there is need to start out on an equal footing and to recognize that we each have vulnerabilities, the older ones and the younger ones. I think part of the challenge also is that as we get older, we are nervous about letting go because we feel as though we are quote unquote, in our prime, in our dotage, and we're at the point where we feel that we will be forgotten. And I think there is a call for us as older women to remember that one of the best ways to ensure that our work and witness continues beyond us is to mentor a younger woman, to walk with her, to journey with her.
One of the things that the YWCA has been looking at and has been working at on a global organizational scale has been addressing intergenerational trauma at the institutional level. Whether it comes from racism, classism, colonialism, there's a lot of trauma that perpetuates in institutional ways. This is something that Nikki has had a lot of experience taking on.
There is an old adage that says, hurting people hurt people. And trauma occurs for many reasons and in different spaces. I think trauma in and of itself is a process. It's a journey, and it's not really just a destination. More so, trauma transformation. In the World Council of Churches, we speak about the pilgrimage of justice and peace, the pilgrimage of justice, reconciliation, and unity. And for me, I'm often struck by pilgrimage as it is recounted in the book of Exodus. And what I recall in Exodus, the story of Moses and the people going around the wilderness, that was 40 years, 40 years. One could argue that that was an entire generation. The challenge was Moses had a vision. Several of the people in the leadership right at the front with him had the vision, but not everybody had the same vision, even though all of them were kind of looking toward this promised land, which would be the transformation of the trauma. Diversity and inclusion is somewhat the same because there is a spectrum and people are at different points along the spectrum.
This spectrum of expectations is something that organizations struggle with because often the pace of change that young people justifiably demand and that an organization's leadership can deliver are at opposite ends.
People have different understandings. People have different hopes, dreams, and aspirations. And those who are within the context of an organization are obliged as organizational leaders to seek consensus. Well, can I tell you, the process of seeking consensus, usually the journey to acceptance, usually the journey to transformation, is feeling like a process of herding butterflies. It's all well and good if we have a vision and we think we are seeing the end process, the end product. The challenge is that in between point A and point Z, there are 24 letters in the alphabet, and sometimes they are replicated and there are complements and divergences along the way. And even while we think we know what we are heading toward as a goal, all these different divergences and complements and pluses take us along rabbit trails. And some are saying, why are you taking so long? And others are saying, wake up. You can't go the distance without me. And negotiating the balance between both sets of voices sometimes leads to further frustration, even more traumatization of everyone along the spectrum.
For Nikki, the solution is a pragmatic doggedness to persevere in spite of criticism and failure.
For me, as a woman of faith, this is where prayer and almost blinders come in. We have to be looking at the end goal and recognizing that we want to get as many of us there as possible. It's therefore going to require pausing, negotiating, having points where we take unilateral decisions, having points where we take the consensus approach to decision making. Recognizing that there are times when we're going to have to be bullheaded, recognizing that sometimes we apologize after the bullheadedness, and sometimes we have to take on the censure and the recriminations that are leveled at us, knowing that we are not necessarily the ones guilty of that which we have been charged with, but as the ones gifted with the leadership of the team, we take it and we move with it, and we may apologize, we may seek new ways. There are times when we have to seek help from those quote unquote less experienced and more experienced than us, whether they are older or younger. There are times when we recognize that doing it the way we've always done is getting us nowhere. There are times when we realize that if we're seeking the common good, we may not necessarily go as far to the left or the right as the majority would have us go.
As Nikki says, this is hard work with no quick shortcuts, but it is still worth doing.
And at the WCC, I will confess, sometimes it feels that we go too slowly. But I've also found that the merit in stopping and taking stock, the merit in evaluating even while we're moving, is that which keeps us, is that which sustains us, and is that which provides the best solution in the long run. I want to stress the importance of intentionality, mutuality, respect, love, communication, openness, confidentiality, and conviviality. Without these, we're not going to get very far, because intergenerational conversations, intergenerational leadership is hard work, very hard work.
The World YWCA is one of the oldest and largest youth-centered organizations, and supporting intergenerational leadership in every sphere of influence has been one of our most fundamental goals. Talking to these three passionate advocates for institutional change has given us a way to move ahead of the challenges and to appreciate the rewards. The World YWCA is a global women's rights organization engaging millions of women, young women, and girls around the world each year across cultures and beliefs to transform lives and the world for the better. With a presence in over 100 countries, our work is grassroots driven, grounded in local communities, and rooted in the transformational power of women. We provide support and opportunities for women, young women, and girls to become leaders and change makers who not only protect their rights and impact their communities, but inspire their peers to do the same. We are focused on building a strong intergenerational network of women and young women leaders, with programs led by and for women and young women in response to the unique needs they see in their communities. Our goal is that by 2035, 100 million young women and girls transform power structures to create justice, gender equality, human dignity, freedom, a sustainable environment, and a world free from violence and war, leading a vital YWCA movement inclusive of all. This podcast series has been funded by the Australian government under the Rise Up Young Women's Leadership and Advocacy Initiative in the Asia-Pacific region. You can find out more about our work on our website. Our handle is World YWCA on all social media. A Sonologue production.